Hello, and welcome to Astrology Studio for Virgo for 2022 and 2023. My name is Eric Francis Coppolino, here with some information and ideas from your astrology. Thank you for your investment of time and thought and trust in this little journey that we are about to go on. The chart that I am using for this reading is the Virgo New Moon of August 27th, Saturday, August 27th, 2022. There are other charts involved, various retrogrades and things like that. Although the main chart that I'll be working with is, again, the New Moon chart, though the others will fall into place as far as matters of timing are concerned. Though this chart for the New Moon is so unusual and precise and a bit overpowered for a New Moon chart. I mean, it is just so full of energy that I am cautious reading it and doing my best to understate the case that this chart seems to be making and generally lowballing things, though tell me if you think I'm avoiding any important subjects. The reason that this chart is so large in the very first instance is that the new moon in the early degrees of Virgo at 04 Virgo 4 degrees and 4 minutes, the moon and sun aligned at 4:16 and 59 seconds Eastern Time on Saturday, is that this new moon is in an exact square to Mars in your 10th house. So by exact square, I mean that it is 3 arc minutes off. It is one 30th of a degree exact. And so when you see a chart that exact, it calls for special care. And in a sense, no matter what the chart might say, whatever content it might describe, it is the precision of the chart that makes it workable. Astrology does not give away its secrets or its, let's say, vested powers easily. But that is the reason to pay special attention when a chart comes along with this much mojo to it. It is better when it is precise than if it is loose or off by even a degree or twos. And in that Virgo spirit, it is lining right up with itself and bringing together two locations in astrology, two thematic areas known as houses that are best kept in line with each other. And one of them is the first house. For you, that is Virgo. And for those who have another rising sign, and then, you know, you're participating in this discussion of the solar chart, the chart for the sign Virgo itself rather than for anyone personally. And the activity in Virgo is descriptive of your means of, let's say, preparing yourself for the kinds of expression that you want to do in the world. It is about your internal process, your readiness, and your personal initiative. The 10th house, where we find Mars in this ridiculously precise square, is the means by which you go about expressing yourself. It's also about your relationship to the wider society that you live in, which means the world of bosses and governments and reputation in this world where we have suddenly all emerged as semi-public figures in the digital age. That's one of the kind of real crazy things about the digital age, is that it has so transcended the whole notion of privacy, that we are, in a sense, all public figures. And this public figure concept is a thing of the 10th house, and the 10th house has various themes of accountability and responsibility, and it also pertains to the work that you do, to the career that you have. And I know that there are different interpretations of the 10th. I try to keep a circumspect view, and what I have seen in charts is that the 10th is not only what you're known for, but I think the 10th is what we are called upon to do and to accomplish. And if we get known for it, that's sometimes or often a good thing. Some people care, some people don't care, though it is rather mightily illuminated in your chart, and there is just a lot of energy here. So the backbone of your chart, and you can see this in the diagram, and I may do a hand-drawn one just to take some things out and make it a little bit more clear. But it's easy to see in either chart. You can see the sun and the moon are in a conjunction, and they make that alignment with Mars, which in the more technical chart, you can see they both have a four next to them. And then there are other points that modify this. And one of the points that modifies the activity in Virgo is a very Virgo-ish point called Trans-Pluto. Now, that's a confusing name because it sounds a lot like Pluto, but it's a hypothetical point, and it is very similar to Virgo in that it is about an integrative process. It's also similar to Virgo in that it contains the themes of self-criticism and narrowness of whatever concept is involved. And in the case of a thing in your first house and a thing that is aligned with your moon and your sun, that is encouraging you to widen your concept of yourself. Now, by the way, this thing is going to spend 75 years, more or less, in Virgo. So it's a long-time visitor. It's only arrived in the last 4 or 5 years or so. So it's got a long way to go through Virgo, and this year in your solar chart, the moon and the sun align with it. And I've been thinking about Trans-Pluto for many, many years, and I have come up with the let's say, bottom line delineation, do the work. Now, there's a beautiful article by Lynn Coyner. It's kind of a little online book called Trans-Pluto is Real. And you'll hear all kinds of examples of how this thing manifests. I learned a lot from reading this, but what do you say to someone when you've got to just sum it up? Well, do the work. And so this is the theme of Virgo. You're accustomed to this. Virgo is fortunately a sign very suited to doing the work because it is so centered on the theme of service. And it's easier to do the work when you're working in service than it is when you are, functioning in some self-serving way that does not have any overflow benefits to others. But the key thing is, you know something about your original instructions here. You by now know something about what it is that you came here to do, whether you find that is easy or difficult or impractical or impossible, seemingly, or whether you're in some enthusiastic, let's get it done mode. Doing the work is essential. And this can often mean setting aside other priorities for a while. It can mean giving certain things up. It can mean making decisions. But ultimately, you have a sense of your purpose, and it is crucial that you remain in contact with that and go through what the Course in Miracles calls a period of sorting out, where the basis of the sorting out is everything is subjected to the question, does this support my purpose or does this detract from my purpose? And that's a very simple value evaluation that, if it were practiced more often, would save people a lot of time and a lot of grief and a lot of misery, because it gives you a basis for understanding whether something is or isn't valuable. And in this case, it is whether something advances the cause of your commitment or detracts from the cause of your commitment. Now, fortunately, very fortunately, the real high power activity of this year and well into next year involves Mars moving through your fellow mutable sign, Gemini. Usually, in kind of basic astrology, the way that the signs are divided up is by element: earth, air, fire, and water. But as we get into more advanced astrology, the three crosses, the quadruplicity, become the more important basis for understanding what is going on. The quadruplicities are cardinal, fixed, and mutable. Your sun is on the mutable cross, and Mars is on the mutable cross. Hence, there's going to be a square with this new moon on Saturday. And Mars is going to spend something like, I have this in the draft of my article about this upstairs, which will be an important supplement to this reading, about the sibling society, about 217 days in Gemini. Forgive me if I've got that off by a little bit, but that was the calculation that I did this morning. And so that is 7 months. Mars entered Gemini a few days ago on Saturday, I believe, and it will remain on August 20th. So, yeah, that was on Saturday. And so it will remain in Gemini until about March 25th. That's quite a while. And that means that the planet Mars, which bestows all of this energy and drive and the ability to focus your intent, is going to be in your 10th house for most of this solar year for you. That is a long time to have Mars in one place. And Mars in Gemini is not exactly an easy place to have Mars. And that is because Gemini is given to various kinds of splits and expressions of dualism. And Mars can fire up quite a bit of conflict. And so one of the things that you're going to need to master is how to get things done, but stir up the least conflict, and also how to resolve these various splits that Gemini indicates, right? It's twins. So Gemini is the beginning of the story where we actually confront the self-other paradox. We confront the ego versus spirit paradox. We confront the psyche versus body paradox. All of these ways that we look at the world and say, oh, that splits in two. You know, paper or plastic, smoking or non-smoking, back in those days, credit or debit, you know, that kind of thing. You live with a lot of this because you have Gemini so prominent in your solar chart. Now, the main difference between the mutable sign ruled by Mercury, Gemini, and the mutable sign ruled by Mercury, Virgo, right? That's pretty similar, right? They're both mutable signs. They're both ruled by the same planet. Is that Virgo is further along in the integration work than is Gemini. Virgo is the thing that's all about the resolution of all the mutable signs are involved in this, especially the mutable signs. But Virgo is really starting to get serious about the integration of opposites. And Gemini is where we really see the opposites for what they are, and therefore initiate the work of integration of opposites. And Mars going through here can stir up quite a bit of quite a bit of strife. And so you're going to need to be an expert in sidestepping or efficiently resolving strife for the purpose of getting the work done. I suggest you get an early start on this, and you probably have had some indications of little clues about Mars in Gemini, even with it's only been there for five or 6 days. You may already be getting some clues. This is going to go on for a while, and there are going to be many different phases of this. Now, the interesting among the many, it's all so fucking interesting, astrology, that is, and this chart in particular. But a really notable facet of this is you'll notice in probably either of the charts, the technical chart or my kind of cartoon sketch of the chart, is that there's this extra little body that's located right next to Mars, and it's like a circle with a T through it, and that's called Admetus, and it is a hypothetical point. It's an astrological point, a planet basically without a body. These are late 19th, early 20th century developments. Nearly no astrologers use them. I do. I find them very helpful. And what it is about is confronting stagnation. Among the two or three most reliable delineators of the trans-Neptunian points is Martha Westcott, and of the point Admetus, which is another one of these points that's going to take like 50 years to go through here. I wouldn't mention it otherwise, but it's exciting because you've got Mars, relatively fast moving, conjunct this thing. At the same time, you've got the new moon conjunct trans Pluto, another one of these hypothetical points that nearly nobody uses or cares about. And Admetus, as written by Martha Westcott, who has been a phenomenal teacher to me, she writes, facing blockages, biding your time, encountering delays, frustrations, complications, or the need for something to happen before success happens. So it's a condition that must be met before success or progress. And then also dealing with raw materials of any kind, like stone and lumber, storage, packaging, and then various forms of indications of tightening, self-containment. So that's complicated, but I think that there is a kind of a pact contradiction in the conjunction of Mars, which just wants to get things done now. It wants action and fulfillment right now, combined with Admetus, which is about patience and working through blockages and biding time. This is suggesting to me that there are events in your life right now that are telling you to get to the next stage, to get a move on, to make progress, and to do some of the things that you need to do in order to do that. And for this to happen, you have to actively work with Mars. And Mars is a hot, sharp object. Mars is like a welding torch or a blowtorch of some kind, and it has the potential to do harm. Its glyph is that of a pointy thing. Mars is the god of war, and it is in Gemini, which is the most basic elemental sign of human relations. Its tarot card is the Lovers or the Brothers, depending on the age of the deck that you're using. It represents the twin brothers, and meaning twins, meaning siblings of any kind, meaning neighbors, meaning communication, meaning commerce. But Mars also means now, and so there is tremendous restlessness in this, but there is also precision in the tightness of this aspect. I mean, you don't get to see aspects this tight every day, particularly with so many points involved, right? Every time you add a point to the aspect pattern, it becomes harder and harder to get them to line up, because you know, it's like how many little turning wheels do you want in your slot machine? It's hard enough to get three of them to line up and win. Well, here, in this one particular aspect pattern, there are 6 points. I haven't mentioned the sixth one. The sixth one is the asteroid Urania. Now, the asteroid Urania is about invention. It is about basically being an innovator in your own life. Now, the word innovator, I mean, you always like see Mark Zuckerberg on the stage wearing his headset. We have a new innovation. It's called Meta. We're going to make the entire world into a fantasy, which we'll get to in a second, because this is a very powerful theme in your chart. And we'll find out that when we get to, Mars square Neptune in a second, and then Pluto in Aquarius in a second. But Urania really is about ideas, and the beautiful thing about ideas is if you run out, then you can always make a new one. If you are out of options, you can use your idea making potential and make a new one. This and sex are as close as we come to having the creative power of God, and this does bestow the creative power of God, because you can go from having that's that little piece of God left within us, go from absolutely nothing to something in no time whatsoever. How long does an idea take? I mean, even if you have to work up to it for a while, there comes that point where you're like, oh, that's it. So be open to ideas about yourself. And the point to focus on for a while is what you think of as the stuck point, as you think of the thing where you have to have the most patience. I would suggest that the thing that you don't want to ever be doing this year is waiting for something to happen. That does not mean to just kind of run wild and act willy-nilly, but on the other hand, waiting is a big waste of time. And Martha has the key phrase to biding your time. Well, I translate that to abiding within time. Live within time and use the time in which you abide. So this chart grants you power. It grants you the ability to have an enormous amount of traction, the ability to extract and use resources from yourself, from your contact network, from the people who are immediately around you. And like any power tool, you really want to be paying attention when you use it. It's one thing to use an ordinary screwdriver, but when you get out the power screwdriver, you know, the drill, and you put in the Phillips head thing, and you've got this thing in your hand that can screw into steel, you want to be more careful with it. You want to recognize that you are handling something that is a little bit unnatural or beyond normal human power. And I think that the overall meta theme here is to work with precision, and not to the point where you delay yourself, but that you just focus your mind, you set your intentions, you decide what the next thing that you need to do is, and proceed apace in a very precise way. All right, let's take a little break, and I'll be back with the next part of your reading. Thank you. Now, the genuinely extraordinary thing about Mars moving through your 10th is that this is going to take 7 months when Mars usually takes about 6 or 7 weeks to go through a sign. And so that is a lot of sustained Mars. It is very hot when you give a lot of oxygen in the form of air to a thing that can burn like Mars. And so this is all reason to be, to be, as I keep saying, to be cautious. But by cautious, I do not mean inactive. I mean to be precise. By the way, we are getting a thunderstorm here in Ulster County for the first time in months. It has hardly rained all summer long, and now today for the first time. I have been hearing thunder, but my curtains are all pulled in the Planet Waves office, and it's kind of real sunny outside, but that is definitely thunder that I'm hearing. Okay, so speaking of thunder and rain, the story of Mars retrograde, and I'll be writing about this over and over again, and I've covered it in an article called Rumors that I've been circulating. That will be included in pretty much every mailing and linked from the new article about the sibling society. Mars is going to proceed very slowly through Gemini, which is what it does when it's about to go retrograde. It slows down to the pace of basically of an outer planet, even though it is the most proximate planet to the Earth. And it will form a square to Neptune, and it will stop there. That's the station retrograde. And so the square goes on for weeks. Mars square Neptune is on my list of the five most difficult things in all of astrology. And it has the potential to be self-destructive. And so that is one of the kind of conditions or qualities that you are going to be monitoring. And self-destructive doesn't just mean that you're a person who never drinks, and then one night you get drunk and go out on the freeway. It's more in the case of someone getting drunk and going out on the freeway, it's more likely to be someone who is a regular drinker who gets out on the freeway when they're drunk. And that's not really the only thing I'm talking about, although those kinds of stupid maneuvers that have no possibility of a positive outcome happening are the kinds of things to be very, very mindful of with Mars square Neptune. Neptune is and has been in your opposite sign, Pisces, since about 2011, so that's like 11 years. And this has been one of the transits that has dominated your life. The outer planets can have a way of doing that, but when the outer planets are angular, meaning when they are on your cross, in this case the mutable cross, they are especially poignant and powerful. And influential. And the seventh is an environment that you must confront all the time. The seventh is just the everyday world of relationships. And it's really technically the house of partnerships, relationships, and open enemies, and people who become marital partners and this kind of thing. But its emphasis is equal on business and on personal relationships. But it's also about the environment generally. And by the environment generally, I mean just the way in which the world around you reflects your state of mind. Whether you feel like you're in a state of chaos, whether you feel like you're in a state of order and organization, a diversity of different possibilities. But it's how you perceive the condition of the world around you. That's what I mean by environment. And the thing with Neptune is that it has created, as Neptune angular almost always does, created a false sense of isolation. It can make things seem more distant than they are. It can create a sense of inaccessibility. And it creates a vulnerability, creates a kind of an opening in your life where things that you're not interested in can come through. Now, this is one of the specialties of life on the planet Earth, the things you're not interested in coming through. And you're almost at the end of this. It's going to go on for a few more years, but you're at the point, having lived through like 85% of the transit, you're at the point where you more or less know how to handle this, except you've never experienced a Mars station retrograde square this point. So it's going to begin a whole new phase of Neptune in the seventh house for you. And this is going to be a very challenging aspect for the world at large. I believe there is going to be some massive diversionary event that happens around this time. So if you're obviously, it is the kind of thing that no one is going to be able to miss the occurrence of, but they may miss the theme of it. And whatever it is that manifests as a global or worldly event is not true. And we can apply that to your personal life, where there's going to be a lot of sorting out of what is real from what is not, what is true from what is not. And so let's say, for example, you have not had a relationship in a long time, and then just someone just shows up and sweeps you off your feet. Be careful. Proceed slowly and make sure you have a sense of who this person is. Neptune is famous for its believable delusions. And so there's a lot of sorting out that is going to be necessary. And with Neptune, the only thing you can do is bring awareness and the willingness to let time go by to figure out who and what someone or something really is. Okay, so between now and Halloween, basically, Mars creeps along and slowly works its way into this 90-degree angle with Neptune, where it is going to stay and hold for a while, because anytime a planet stations retrograde, particularly an inner planet, it holds its position in 1 degree for a long time. We don't notice this with the outer planets because they're retrograde like 40% of the time. It's like, you know, okay, it's subtle, nice to read that stuff, but with it doesn't seem special. And the retrogrades only are like 4 degrees, so it's like, well, big deal. But with a planet that really moves, kind of like the Sun or Mercury, which is Mars, when it goes retrograde, that thing of slowing down and holding the degree for a long time is poignant. It is meaningful. It is important to work that influence and power in a conscious and meticulous way. And this is very difficult when you combine the influence of Mars and Neptune and Pisces and Gemini, because this is the perfect setup for what the heck does this really mean? What is this really about? So you want to not be in a rush. You want to be making sure that your various bases are covered. My general cautionary words of, for example, Neptune rising, but Neptune in the first, Neptune in the ascendant, one of my astrological specialties, is to make sure your door locks all work, to make sure that if, you know, 28 people have had a copy of your front door key, that you treat yourself to something special, which is a new lock. Have the locksmith come. Make sure that you're, if you have an alarm system and you believe in that, make sure that it works right. Make sure that your car is locked at all times. It is these easy to forget vulnerabilities that can either invite or repel transgression. Now, we are in the career territory here because Mars is in the 10th, solar 10th house, or if you're Virgo rising, the whole sign 10th. Doesn't really matter. It's the same theme no matter what. Astrology is much simpler than it's made out to be. That we're in career territory when we're talking about the 10th house. This is not an easy time in the career life of anyone right now. And that is because the influence of the digital environment is just putting every last known thing through the shredder. If you told someone in like 1980 that they were going to use a computing device more sophisticated than the thing that put Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin on the moon to order a pizza, you would have laughed. You would have thought they were high on acid, which they probably would have been. But that's what we do now. We use these computing devices that used to be more powerful than the computer that could schedule an entire university to push a little thing and have your special fish taco delivered to your house with one push of a little tap, one tap on a little imaginary button. That's too much power. And that's the world we live in. And that is the thing that is mangling, shredding, blending, and applying this level of completely disembodied confusion to everything. And that's the world in which we are living. And now this is coming to a new peak in things associated with, on the one hand, your career and your sense of who you are, first house to 10th house, and your career, 10th house, reputation, 10th house, and your relationship angle, Pisces. And so I would suggest limiting the involvement of new partners at this time, filtering people out, and being particularly brutal on those who lie or cheat in any way, shape, or form, no matter how small. Sideline them. Ice them out. Keep them on the sidelines. You might not want to go blow for blow with them, but you want to minimize your involvement with anyone who displays the tendency of dishonesty in any form. Now, I write with the presumption that my reader or my listener or my client is a person of good faith, a sincere person. However, let's just say that you know you've got a truthiness problem. Well, now's the time to tighten that up. Now's the time to be less tolerant of any such matter or issue that you have in yourself. And where this is likely to manifest is in one of the ways that is where, for most people, the deception slips in, which is, well, I have to do this for my job. I'm not a dishonest person. It's just that my job makes me be a dishonest person. I would never lie to my wife or my neighbor. I'll just sign 5,000 bullshit death certificates, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, well, I know this product's going out without any testing. I know this air tank might, you know, we fudged our safety data and the air tank might explode and all this stuff. So it may not be that dramatic. It may not be the kind of thing that can, you know, land your company in court, but in your professional involvement, it is vitally important that you maintain your impeccability. And think of it as the only thing that you have. And where Mars square Neptune is concerned, it is easy to say, I usually do that, but I'll skip it this time. So, without putting too sharp of a point on that, that is going to be going on. Now, I left out two points from my Section 1 discussion that are thematically similar to what I am talking about here. And these are two extra points in what is the Grand Cross. If you look at either one of the charts, you'll see there's a point in Pisces there's several points in Pisces, which for you is your relationship house. And one of them is a point that I cast into a chart for the first time to cast this new moon chart. And it looks like a hashtag with a little sedil beneath it. And that's a newish, newly named, I think it was named in 22, point called Gong Gong. So the gongs are pronounced differently. They have different tonal inflection in Chinese. So the two different words. But basically, it is named for a Chinese kind of god of mischief who likes to cause little disasters. And so in a and Mars in the new moon chart is exactly square Gong Gong. It is not as dramatic as the new moon square Mars. It's less than 1 degree, and it's right in the pattern. And this is caution against, you want to keep the Calamity Janes and people with really bad luck and or those who are prone to mischief and or, if the girl in the office has had 14 car accidents, she's not the one to drive you to the airport. Take a fucking taxi and spend $100. You want to be careful of allowing people into your life who are prone to disaster. We all know that these people exist. That nothing happens in their life without some extreme ridiculous complication. Keep an eye on them. Keep them in the spot where they belong. And the entire relationship angle of your chart continues to vibrate with cautionary messages. Cautionary messages. The two best things we can say about this angle, in addition to proceed with impeccability and stay back and away from disaster-prone individuals, is that there are going to be some people who really do understand the nature of consequences. They're your friends. You want to stay in dialogue with the people who actually understand that decisions get results, that actions have consequences. They'll be there. And the second is people who advocate for others from the heart. The opposite of that, and I'm talking about the asteroid Juno, the opposite of that is people who are essentially jealousy and control drama kings and queens. The other opposite, going back to the affirmative side of Juno, is advocacy. Now, the advocacy theme came from Martha Lang Westcott, and this is an interesting example of how I work with delineations, because I read in her work for years that Juno not only is about the bone of contention in relationships, so beware of that, like the red herring, the bone of contention that always comes up, the thing you can't forgive about the person. And jealousy and control and Hera, complete bitch. But like Hera delaying the arrival of the midwife to the place where the god's going to be born just to screw them over. Really, really ridiculous stuff. Like the Greeks were troubled by Hera, who is the predecessor of Juno. But Martha Westcott says advocacy. This is a point about advocacy. And in Pisces, particularly in degree 18 of Pisces, where it is for the new moon, notice those who advocate from the heart and soul, those who are truthful and who are able to stand up for others when there is nothing in it for themselves and or when they take a risk for themselves. Those people, they will be there. You will notice some of them in your life. And we're talking about ethical and spiritually advanced people. So your relationship angle is on red alert right now because of the Mars square Neptune, not just yellow alert, but on high alert. And the presence of Gong Gong in this aspect pattern, which can bring various floods and so forth and so on. And I think, by the way, we're likely to have an autumn hurricane season with a good few floods in it. So I think it's wise that the masters of the Ashokan Reservoir are leaving one of the basins empty enough to take 7 inches of rain in one shot. I talked to somebody there the other day. Yeah, we can handle 7 inches in one storm. Okay, this could happen. So bear that all in mind. Maintain a kind of a flood preparation. I have a good friend whose house flooded 3 times. He went away for the weekend and left his Hasselblad camera equipment on the floor of his living room, not expecting there to be a flood, and guess what happened? So keep your stuff off the floor. Keep the valuable stuff on higher shelves, in metaphorically and literally. Okay. The thing with Pisces is that it offers a creative and a spiritual influence, which you love about the world. There are people and modes of expression that you experience in your environment. I mean, this is not, I've never read this anywhere. I'm not sure I've ever said it in a reading, but Virgo must be one of the great lovers of art and music, of all the archetypes of the zodiac. And that's because when you look out at the world, you see Pisces. And Pisces is the place where so much of the ineffable beauty, the soulful ineffable beauty, comes into our lives. And yet Pisces and its corresponding planet Neptune are among the most easy to corrupt archetypes in all of astrology. And the lure is, the way that you drop your guard is, someone is such an incredible musician. It's too bad he's such a complete alcoholic. Oh, forget that. I'm just in love with the person because they're such an incredible musician or artist. It is vital with Pisces that you work with both sides of the equation. In fact, Pisces is completely circumspect. It's like, with Pisces encompasses the entire zodiac. So you have all 12 sides of the equation in Pisces. And without being suspicious, and without being someone who's, you know, like judgmental or critiquing everything out of existence, you want to make sure you have a balanced picture of what is going on in the world around you, and an honest assessment of what is going on with people in your life. Okay, so in the third segment, I want to look at what's going on in the Earth signs, and then I will include some of what is going on in Aries. Aries being a vitally important sign to Virgo. I mean, all signs are not equal to all the other signs, and so certain signs really stand out. And one of the signs that really stands out for Virgo is Aries, your eighth solar house, the house of what you exchange, the house of sex, death, money, power, jealousy, secrets, control, and surrender. Sex, death, money, power, jealousy, secrets, control, and surrender. That's the eighth. That's Aries. That's the house where you do lots of finding yourself. Finding yourself. And I'd like to take a look at what's going on in the Earth signs and then comment a bit about Pluto's ingress into Aquarius. That's a lot to handle in one section. It may go a little bit longer. Sometimes I surprise myself by getting the message. I've made the point in a succinct way, and I move on. So let's see. Let's take another song break, music break. The music today is composed by Vision Quest featuring Jelko. He's a magnificent ambient artist who has provided a kind of a database of original ambient pieces for me to use in this reading, and he likes to key them to tarot cards, and from one of his groups of compositions, this is piece number 21, which is associated with the world or the universe. Back in a moment. Thank you. here we are for part three. It's actually raining out. It took a little time. Let's start with Aries, since we've covered a lot of ground in terms of relationships, and I recognize that I am a cautionary, and at this stage in my life probably do not have one romantic molecule in my body. The nature of the sign Aries, wherever it lands in a chart or a solar chart, is going to be a place where someone seeks understanding of themselves through experience. And where Aries lands in the chart for Virgo, remembering that the solar chart is the chart for the sign, not for the person. So we're reading archetypally here. We're talking about the astrology of the sign, which has a lot to do with the astrology of the people with important influences in the sign. Where Aries lands for Virgo is in the eighth house, the house of the deepest exchanges that we have with other people. In the first English language astrology book, Christian Astrology by William Lilly, he delineates it as death, dowry, and the substance of the bride. It is the house that has the magical faculty of inheritance. It has the magical faculty of civil death, where Jane Doe becomes Mrs. John Smith, and the previous entity vanishes, which, even though it is not, 1812, lots of women still depend upon this to be able to vanish, but it's getting a little harder in the digital age, where everyone is not only famous, but also a private investigator. You have Aries in the eighth, and that is a lot about seeking your experience of yourself with other people, through other people, through your relationships with other people. This involves a sense of relationship where there is a merging and alchemical transformation of your personality as you proceed into and through those relationships. Now, you may be in a different stage of your life with this than someone else. You may have decided that it is the best thing to do. You may have found the right person who is the perfect complement, or let's say forum or framework for you to express yourself in your life. There are a lot of possibilities, and you may be discovering that there is a risk involved in this process of entering a relationship, merging with the person, losing yourself in some way, then getting restless in that condition, needing to be distinctly yourself, not expressed through another person, and then you exit from the relationship in order to get back to your what then seems like your real self. This is something to be very cautious about. There are things luring you into this. For example, Jupiter, the ruler of your seventh, is in Aries, the eighth, and it's bringing, it's like saying, here's the place to go for the really juicy stuff in relationships. But Chiron is their much longer-term visitor. Chiron, basically 2018 to 2026, 27, something like that, is saying, okay, you got to be very self-aware in these conditions, and maybe the idea of merging with another person in any way, shape, or form is not a wholesome goal or objective in relationship, and you need to remain independent and not be in special relationship with someone, but rather relate to other people as a whole being and fully formed personality. This can be daunting. It can be frightening to many people. It can seem impossible to many people. This is, they only know how to live in the framework of a relationship with someone else, and there's a fine line between that and living vicariously through someone else. All of this is emphasized, and there are going to be some surprises and unusual developments here, particularly I believe it is in March when let's get the Pluto ingress into Aquarius chart going position. Pluto enters Aquarius. When Pluto enters Aquarius on March 23rd, this is happening a bit before that, but also in the month of March. March is a very, very eventful month. There is a conjunction of Jupiter and Chiron in Aries in your eighth house, and so I would propose that through these next 6 or 7 months, making sure a few things are extant. Your own bank account. You need enough money on hand to be able to do something independently of anyone. I don't mean buying a Greek island. I mean anything independently of someone else. Your own transportation would be a very good idea. You want to be able, given the astrology that's coming, you want to be able to be confident that you can proceed independently. But this is mostly a psychic thing. This is mostly a thing about the structure of one's personality. And remember that we live in a world where relationship is defined as people whose personalities fit in this exactly, precisely, mutually dependent way. This is the idea of a healthy relationship, not friends and, you know, trusted mutual teaching. That kind of gets included maybe in the you're such a wonderful teacher, such a good friend. But I really mean that's the basis of the relationship, and not any form of dependency, codependency, or vicarious living. You are who you are. You are a free and independent person. So that's a little bit about what's going on in Aries. Now, notably, the ruler of Aries is Mars. Mars is about to move retrograde. Mars is moving through the 10th. I have not mentioned the profound family implications of the 10th. And Mars is the representative of Aries, this whole eighth house dimension, and so this idea of living through another person is going to have an extension into some form of maternal family. And you're not here to talk to, so I can't sort this out with you. But that generally is the 10th, is the mother and her, her kind of ancestral crowd. All right, next. Let's talk briefly. The sound of thunder is so nice. I hope you can hear it. It's so awesome to be hearing this. It used to rain up here once a week or more. Okay, so you have lived through now Pluto in Capricorn since 2008. Just to give you an idea, Pluto in Capricorn is essentially 2008 through the transition, which is going to go on for a while, begins in 2023. It's 15 years. Pluto's transitions take a year and a half at this stage of its cycle in the zodiac. It's moving very far from the sun, taking more and more time. For example, the approximately 16 years of Pluto in Capricorn is longer than like the 14 years of Pluto in Scorpio, and it's much shorter than the 21 and a half or so years of Pluto in Aquarius. I think it's just shy of 21 years, actually. So as Pluto moves further from the sun, as it's doing, it's going to take longer and longer to go through a sign. This has many growth implications for the people born under this astrology, but anyway, Pluto moving through Capricorn has attempted, let's say it has been affiliated with an evolutionary process where your goal has been, the like spiritual driving force kind of goal has been to open up creatively and sexually and to not not be so sanctimonious about matters of sexuality and to allow yourself to be an impure person, be someone who is willing to experiment and to set aside your notions of all the rules that have to be followed for, in effect, borrowing from religious language, sex to not be sinful. Now, the new moon takes place in four degrees and just a little touch of Virgo, and this is trine pholus at 4 degrees and 24 minutes of Capricorn, also conjunct Quasar. Pholus, I don't talk about trines a lot, but this is a very important trine. And the trine is an opening into the fifth house where you are going to get a chance to experiment with what might be called some form of left tantra, the red tantra, the tantra of pushing limits rather than the tantra of purity and of respecting boundaries. I'm probably familiar with the Hierophant card in the tarot, and there's two monks kneeling before the Hierophant or the Pope, and one is wearing a vestment with lilies and one is wearing a vestment with roses. And the lilies, roses, polarity is the purity path and the path of passion. And so you're being invited to proceed on the path of passion. This somewhat contradicts your nature and may make you nervous, and it should be treated with some caution, though it's difficult to express how to proceed with caution when you are invited onto the red path. It's not like you really could have told Jerry Garcia that if he had only, smoked two packs of cigarettes a day rather than three, or maybe only drank a six pack of cream soda rather than a case of cream soda a day and all this stuff, he would have had a better life. It doesn't make any sense. So the important thing is your awareness and knowing when you are on a certain journey. Now, with Pholus, the idea of the small cause and the big effect, or a little curiosity, I wonder what's inside this box, comes into play. And so it is better to pause before you pull the cork on the genie bottle. And to know when you are pulling the cork on the genie bottle, right? So it's easy in the fairy tale, when the bottle washes up on the beach. But it may not be so obvious if you get a lamp and polish it, what you're bringing out. And so remember that there is a kind of an X factor with Pholus, and if you decide things are going in a direction you like, definitely maintain your vigilance and your awareness. But if you and proceed, and if you decide that they're going in a direction you don't like so much, well, then maybe it's a good idea to alter the story or slow down or introduce a new influence. Now, Pluto is not long for Capricorn. It is going to begin its ingress into Aquarius March 23rd at 8:14 in the morning, Eastern Daylight Time. And this begins a whole new phase in the history of the human story. The transits of Pluto always tell the story of the world in a very big way. Under Pluto and Sagittarius, we had the rise of both globalism and world beat everything. You could hardly find a sushi restaurant before Pluto entered Sagittarius. Now there's like all kinds of, you can get like Cajun Szechuan sushi in soup. Yada boo, in the supermarket, right? So, what have kids always thought there was Cajun sushi in the supermarket? Pluto in Capricorn, this time of the collapse of society, Pluto touches its toe into Capricorn, and there's this controlled demolition of the housing bubble, the subprime mortgage crisis, as it was called, which becomes this great recession, recapitalizing banks and TARP and people trotting off with, you know, suddenly, like, people did nothing, and suddenly they thought they were very special because they were multimillionaires overnight, combined with an ongoing controlled demolition of the structure of society and the economy, often disguised as other things. I anticipate that when Pluto reaches Aquarius, there's going to be a similar immediate cascade effect. This, despite the fact that Pluto will retrograde twice back into Capricorn. When Pluto arrives in Aquarius on 3/23/23, that's the beginning of the Pluto in Aquarius era. And this is cautionary to all of us to preserve our humanity. We must act and live in such a way where we make our first and really only goal of life to preserve our humanity. The thing that is coming after our humanity is this thing that, like, people like to pretend does not exist, which is transhumanism, which is the merging of humans and digital technology. But the signs of it are all over the place, and they were well established in science fiction 50, 60 years ago. And they exist today in the form of everything from cochlear implants to bionic hands to injections that contain magnetically active nanoparticles that can be remotely controlled, to the internet of people having ID, IP addresses, to, I saw a thing come by my inbox, Bill Gates is now calling for the implanting of infants with chips. This is transhumanism. Transhumanism can also include this kind of unholy relationship that we have with our digital devices, upon which we are not only extremely dependent, but also seem to be merging with them. The putting of memory into your hand, you know, people keep everything in their devices and have replaced visual memory with camera memory, which is a complete distortion of memory. And it is taking memory out of the purely biological and spiritual realm and placing it into the mechanical and digital realm. So this is all a place for caution. You are an earth sign. You are the earth sign that is about the earth itself, the mud and the dirt and the fields and the trees and the flowers and the plants and the fields and the crops and the goddess herself. And you are not a person who, I don't imagine, thinks it would be particularly appealing to merge with a computer. But the thing is that the lure of doing this is never actually called what it is. It is never said to be what it is. It is always said to be something else. Now, you have Aquarius in the sixth. This is the house associated with work. And that is the place to be particularly careful, is in any employment environment. Now, the employment environment now consists of everyone sitting in front of devices. I mean, I'm sitting at a desk with several soundboards, synthesizers, probably I've got about 10 hard drives on my desk and battery backups and a computer and speakers and all. This is just I'm at a fairly typical workstation for a digital content creator and musician. But we are all sitting in these consoles of one kind or another that were really only the stuff of science fiction not that long ago. And so that is one of the places where the transhuman influence is likely to enter. The sixth also, by the way, very significantly, is associated with health, with medicine. And so I would urge you to be extremely cautious and understand the implications of anything that A, cannot be reversed, and B, which has digital and technological implications, which C, is involved with the health of your physical or your mental bodies. Those three conditions. And this is because Pluto is coming to Aquarius. And the effect of Pluto in Aquarius is going to be, several things, and I will be ongoing writing a blue streak about this. I will continue my discussion in the monthly horoscope article for Planet Waves, coming out in less than a week. It is about the transhuman realm moving on us like a bitch. Very rapidly, always in some invisible form, always in some form that was not perceptible to the normal eye or normal consciousness, unless you were really paying attention to what was going on. Unless you really had your ear to the ground, and you know you've got your ear to the ground when you are noticing things that other people are not noticing, and you mention them, and they say you're crazy. That's generally the sign that you're paying attention. And I don't mean making shit up, and I don't mean reading QAnon, and I don't mean having paranoid delusions and fantasies, and I don't mean the moon landing. I mean when you have seen 16 articles that describe the implications of the world converting into some kind of biosecurity zone. The entirety of what we've experienced since early 2020 was the rise of the transhuman realm. Every last facet of what we have experienced since early 2020 involved digital technology. Only it was cast as some kind of a super biological phenomenon, the kind that you would read about in a Stephen King novel. But behind the scrim of this super biological phenomenon was a technological phenomenon. So the place where biology meets technology in your chart is Aquarius in the sixth house, because Aquarius is a sign of technology and electrical technology, and the sixth is the sign of house of work, health, and well-being. And now Pluto is coming there, and that is going to concentrate a lot of power in Aquarius for you in the sixth of health, well-being, work. Okay, so the other part about Aquarius is that you are someone who wants, needs, and loves to work collaboratively. Pluto in this is Aquarius on the sixth house. And you, I think, probably feel best when you are working in a co-equal way as a member of a very competent team. This is an asset. This is important. You do not, so far as I know, believe that an army of one is possible. And every man is certainly not for himself in a world that is even remotely sane or supportive of the human experience. We are heading for a kind of global initiation that is going to impact everyone in the world as a member of a group of some groups of some kind, where the relationship of the individual to the group is a critical spiritual factor, and where the group phenomenon of technology is involved. This is a small example of this is. There's a crisis rolled out in early 2020, and at the same time as this crisis is being rolled out, there's this entire technological sphere where we are not allowed to talk about it openly. YouTube just yesterday revoked its strict rules for what can and can't be said about this aforementioned crisis. If you've ever read those rules, they are hilarious. I thought I'm going to do a YouTube and read them. I'm going to just read the rules into a YouTube and place it on YouTube. And the only reason I didn't do it, I mean, it would have been hilarious. I was afraid to lose my YouTube channel because all it contains is astrology readings I've done for you. Hundreds of astrology readings are contained there, and they're not contained anywhere else. So I didn't do it. But they just repealed their rules yesterday. And those rules say, you can't say that. You can't say that. You can't question that. You're not allowed to say that. You're not allowed to ask if there's really a virus. Well, that's kind of wild that they roll out a crisis and then a whole set of rules in the town square of what you cannot say at the same time. This was like a 5-minute preview trailer of Black Mirror. Pluto hadn't even arrived in Aquarius yet, where the power of groups to exclude, the power of groups to take power, take charge of society, is going to become the central spiritual issue. But in the background of that central spiritual issue is the whole matter of the impact of this technology on our bodies, souls, spirits, and psyches, on us, what this has done to transform us. And you are perfectly situated, and I'll end on this note, to investigate this and to be fully aware of it and to not be so eager to bite various hooks or lines or sinkers. Because Uranus, a kind of extension of Aquarius, is making its way through your ninth house of spirituality, your relationship to your higher self or God. Your spiritual quest is in Taurus. And Taurus is now the home of Uranus. Now, Uranus and Taurus is the perfect example of the incursion of technology onto physicality. The incursion is the presence of the transit. The planet is there. The theme of the planet, Uranus, is innovation, electrical technology, digital technology, and all of its cousins. And the energy field of Taurus is the energy field of the physical body. The field, the actual sweating, bleeding, loving, fucking, running, climbing the mountain, eating a good meal, physical body of Taurus. And you have this in the ninth house of your spiritual quest, your relationship to your higher self, the Holy Spirit, God, your inner teacher, your guide, however you want to think of this as being. And this has a lot to teach you about the nature of what technology has done to us. And there's two reasons why people don't want to go here. The first one is that they don't know to think. It doesn't occur to them because the environmental factors we live with tend to just vanish. They are invisible. And so if you can't name something or particularly see something or identify something or understand something, you're not likely to think about it. If it just disappears into the background, if it's just a fact of life, if you think, well, now it's time to open up my app and I'm going to tap this one button and my bank account will be hit for $50 and I'll get a pizza and a Pepsi. Well, who notices that? You just want your pizza. You don't think, what are the implications of this? Where is this all going? Well, that brings us to the second reason. Nobody really wants to think about where it's all going, because when you think about where it's all going, it ain't going somewhere pretty, but we still have to live with it. We still have to understand and witness and see. And by the way, even if you're a complete Luddite living in a cave or in a cabin without electricity on a mountain, you're still influenced by the total environment of the planet. Your consciousness is transformed along with the consciousness of the entire human race. This is what it means to be human. We exist in a field, a reality or energy field. And we are, in that sense, unified because one way or another, we are all going through the same thing. In different ways, sometimes radically distinctive ways, but we are going through the same thing. We are on the same planet at the same time, and this is the world in which we now live. Okay, so thank you for your thought about all of this and your patience. And if you have any thoughts or questions, you're welcome to type them in as a comment below this reading. Someone will see it, Victoria, or someone will see it, and I or one of us will respond and, hopefully give you a fulfilling answer. All right. Happy birthday. I haven't said that. Thank you again for, indulging yourself in the rather singular astrology experience of planet waves and the way that I perceive and do things. And I'm looking forward to being in contact with you on a different day. I'm easy to reach, by the way. Copy me two email addresses. How about efc@planetwaves.net and efc@chironreturn.org? This just doubles the chances that I am going to see it. And if I don't reply in a fairly short time, like 2 hours, chances are I didn't see it. I tend to like to reply quickly. And I have not promised much in the way of resources to this reading. I'm going to quickly draw up the kind of cartoon version of the chart, and we'll get that up on the delivery page for this. But if you can think of any resources that that you think you might need, please do do ask. And you, having listened to this reading once or twice, the writing that I do over the next 6 months is going to be particularly relevant, and you will recognize the themes, and you'll have a way to take the collective themes I'm talking about and place them into a personal context. Okay, so please keep your eyes open, keep your ears on. If you see someone in the world who needs help, please help them. If you need help, please ask for it. And on that note, I leave you with a little puff of God's love, or a great big one. Thank you again. And bye for now.